Good morning. This is Greg, and I'll be reading the Vermilion County News for Tuesday, March 31st, 2020. And I'll start with the front page of the commercial news, where a top article is entitled, District 118 to Find Way to Pay Bus Drivers. And this is by Carol Rome. Danville. Danville District 118 school board members will meet via teleconference today to consider how to provide financial support to the district's school bus drivers while schools statewide are closed due to COVID-19. The board is expected to ask Superintendent Alicia Geddes to lead the negotiations for an addendum to an agreement with the district's transportation provider, First Student. First Student employees ratified a three-year contract in October of 2017 that was negotiated between the International Brotherhood of Teamsters Local 26 in Champaign, which represents 85 school bus drivers, 30 to 35 monitors, and a couple of mechanics at First Student's Danville site, and First Student's parent company in Cincinnati. The current contract extends through August 15, 2020. Due to the closure of schools statewide, the state has directed school districts to financially support school bus drivers for the time being. The Illinois State Board of Education has asked us to work out how to pay our bus drivers, Geddes said on Monday. We're supposed to enter into an addendum. I will be trying to get a look at their payroll, she said. Although the board is meeting via teleconference, the board will still accept public comments during the meeting. The comments, however, must be submitted by mail. To participate during the public comment portion of the meeting, questions or comments must be emailed to d118publiccomments@danville118.org before the start of the meeting at 3 p.m. today. All public comments will be read out loud during the public comment portion of the meeting. Our next story is entitled Spreading Cheer. Salt Fork Teachers Promote Positivity with Parade. And this is by Carol Rome. Catlin. A dozen or so Salt Fork North Elementary School teachers hopped in their cars Monday morning and drove around Catlin to lift the spirits of their students. Our teachers saw Westville's parade last week and wanted to do it here, Salt Fork North Principal Eric Free said. They ran with it. They wanted the opportunity to connect with their students. Salt Fork K-5 math interventionist Christian Strunga was one of the teachers who helped organize the Wave Parade. There have been videos of teachers doing parades nationwide, Strunga said. The Judith Chacoma teachers did theirs last week. During a recent Facebook group messaging session between Salt Fork teachers, Strunga said she asked the teachers if having a parade for their students was something they wanted to do. The teachers responded enthusiastically, with some decorating their cars using chalk paint on their windows. As the parade went by Monday, students stood out in their yards holding up colorful signs to cheer on the teachers. A lot of homes in Catlin are displaying hearts in their windows, Strunga said, referring to an initiative to display hearts in windows to promote happiness and positivity during the COVID-19 restrictions. We have teachers living in St. Joseph and Sydney, and this was a way for them to see their students, she said. This was something positive for us to do, and a way to be connected without breaking social distancing. And our last article from the front page today is entitled Hay Fever or Virus. And this is actually an AP story by Michael Rubenkam. Hamburg, Pennsylvania. The spring breezes of 2020 are carrying more than just tree pollen. There's a whiff of paranoia in the air. For millions of seasonal allergy sufferers, the annual onset of watery eyes and scratchy throats is bumping up against the global spread of a new virus that produces its own constellation of respiratory symptoms. Forecasters are predicting a brutal spring allergy season for swaths of the U.S. at the same time that the COVID-19 cases are rising dramatically. That's causing angst for people who never had to particularly worry about their hay fever other than to stock up on antihistamines, decongestants, and tissues. Now they're asking, are these my allergies or something more sinister? Everyone is sort of analyzing every sneeze and cough right now, said Kathy Prizwara, who manages an online community of allergy sufferers for the Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America. Never mind the differing symptoms, that sneezing and runny nose, hallmarks of hay fever, are not typically associated with COVID-19, which commonly produces coughing, fever, and in more serious cases, shortness of breath. Never mind that allergies don't cause fevers. Allergy sufferers fret that there's just enough overlap to make them nervous. Allergy season is already underway in Oceanside, California, where Ampi Convacar is dealing with a runny nose, sinus pain and headache, and an urge to sneeze. Last year, she would have considered her symptoms a mere annoyance. Now, they cause tremendous anxiety. People with asthma, like Convacar, are at higher risk of severe illness from COVID-19. I consider it as something that could kill me because of COVID-19 floating around, Convacar said via email. With a family member still traveling to work every day, she said, I don't know what he got out there. Many garden variety hay fever sufferers, of whom there are about 19 million adults in the U.S., are also on heightened alert. They're taking their temperatures each day, just in case. They're hiding their sneezes and sniffles from suspicious colleagues and grossed-out grocery shoppers. They're commiserating with each other and sharing memes on social media, like, I don't know if I should buy Zyrtec or turn myself into the CDC. Pamela Smell is reminded of allergy season every time she looks out the window of her home office where her cherry tree is blooming. Spring came early to Maryland, she said, and lots of people are coughing and sneezing from the pollen. You do what you have to do. You take your meds for allergies and stay away from people, Smelser said. People get really hanky about coughing right now. Though she's had allergies for years, Smelser, a semi-retired social worker and community college teacher outside Baltimore, admits to being a touch paranoid. She takes her temperature every day because she's 66 and, well, you can never be too careful. I can't rule out that I have anything, she said. That's the paranoia. You can't even get a test to say this is all seasonal allergies in Pennsylvania. Pear trees are budding, red maple are beginning to flower, and Leslie Herrer's allergies are already in full bloom. The 64-year-old retired nurse, who lives about an hour north of Philadelphia, is coping with a scratchy throat, an urge to sneeze, and a headache behind the eyes. As a medical professional, Herrer knows her symptoms are attributable to her allergies. She also knows that other people are really flipped out about this, including the scowling family of three who saw her sneeze into her elbow outside of a Chinese restaurant, and instead of continuing on to their destination, the pizza shop next door, got in their car and sped away. I was like, I'm sorry you missed your pizza, Herrer said. People's reactions are just over the top. In Austin, Texas, where pollen counts are high, Marty Watson initially dismissed his itchy eyes, mild headache, coughing, and sneezing as the product of a tree allergy, even after his temperature became slightly elevated. Then, in mid-March, he realized he could no longer smell a pungent sourdough starter, and friends began sending him news stories that said a loss of smell sometimes accompanied a coronavirus infection. Austin is notorious for all sorts of allergies, and it became really hard to tell. Is it this? Is it that? Said Watson, 52. For most people, the new coronavirus causes mild or moderate symptoms that clear up in a couple of weeks. Older adults and people with existing health problems are at higher risk of more severe illness, including pneumonia and death. As allergy season ramps up in Pennsylvania, Dr. Laura Fisher, an allergist in Lancaster, expects an influx of worried patients. She is advising them to keep up with their medications, stay at home as much as possible, and monitor for symptoms that seem unrelated to their allergies. I think people are more afraid of catching it, more afraid of going out and getting it from the grocery store or drive-thru, than they are of their usual symptoms being COVID, said Fisher, president of the Pennsylvania Allergy and Asthma Association. Jessica Tannehill initially blew off her symptoms as allergy-related. Tannehill, 39, of Adamsville, Alabama, started with a runny nose and sneezing. Body aches and a cough came next, followed by shortness of breath. She thought her seasonal allergies had led to a bout of anxiety, nothing more, especially since she'd been outside all day doing yard work and washing her truck. I didn't take it seriously, she said. Turns out she's contracted COVID-19, which doesn't preclude the possibility that she'd had allergies as well. Tannehill, who's now on the mend, acknowledged that she was one of the people that was saying they're overreacting to all of this. But now I wish I was more careful. Next, we have a staff report, and this is entitled, Chris Delivers Food Packs to Seniors. Danville. Chris Healthy Aging Center, along with many community volunteers, including employees of the City of Danville, will deliver free emergency food packs for seniors age 60 and older in Vermilion County today. These individuals are older adults who are part of the Meals on Wheels program at Chris. Older adults are in a high-risk category for illness, and it is more important now than ever to keep them safe and healthy at home. Chris staff and the volunteers from the City of Danville are preparing to deliver more than 900 meals, all while taking every possible measure to adhere to social distancing protocols. These measures include maintaining a distance of at least 6 feet between themselves and another volunteer or client, wearing personal protective equipment such as gloves, and sanitizing equipment often. These kits provide 7 days of shelf-stable meals for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Each emergency meal pack varies, but will contain 7 non-perishable meals. Meal packs may include items such as cereal, fruit bars, grits, graham crackers, tuna salad, lasagna, beef stew, soup and crackers, applesauce, fruit juices, non-fat dry milk, cheese, and more. These emergency meal packs are being given to individuals who are part of the Meals on Wheels program at Chris Healthy Aging Center. To inquire about the Meals on Wheels program at Chris Healthy Aging Center, call 443-2999 or email info@agestrong.org. And next we have another staff report. This one is entitled, Hupston Sets Guidelines During Emergency. Hupston. The Hupston City Council has passed a resolution declaring an emergency within the city in response to a COVID-19 case confirmed in Iroquois County. What this means to the public? City Hall will be closed to the public. The drop box outside City Hall will remain available for placement of water payments and other city business. Residents can call 283-5833 for payments over the phone or other questions. The City of Hupston website is still open for business, and forms are available and payments can be made through this site. Water shutoffs will no longer occur during the duration of the emergency. Late fees still will be incurred on delinquent accounts. The police department's front window will be closed once an intercom system is installed outside City Hall. 2019 golf cart stickers will be honored until May 1st. Golf cart owners must still maintain insurance and equipment requirements as laid out in the ordinance. The Hupston Police Department will handle more calls over the phone if possible. Officers still will respond to emergency calls as normal. Additional steps of stage 3 will be put in place as cases continue to grow and if a case is located within Hoopston. The full text of the City of Hoopston COVID-19 response plan can be found on the city website at www.cityofhoopston.com. The City of Hoopston officially moved into Stage 3 of its COVID-19 response plan last Thursday when a COVID-19 case was announced in Iroquois County, which is within a 40-mile radius of Hoopston. The Council then held an emergency meeting on Friday. During that meeting, the City Council passed a resolution declaring an emergency within the city. And now we're about halfway through our time today, so we'll stop and turn to the obituaries for Tuesday, March 31st. And the first one we have is for Helen Louise Kinder. Helen Louise Hayes Kinder, 101, of Catlin, passed away peacefully at noon on Tuesday, March 24th, 2020, at Hawthorne Inn in Danville. The family expresses their gratitude to the staff at Hawthorne Inn for their care and concern for Helen's well-being. A memorial service to celebrate the life of a devoted daughter, wife, mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother will be announced at a future date. Interment will be in the Oak Ridge Cemetery in Catlin alongside Ira George. The Robison Chapel in Catlin is handling the arrangements. Josephine or Joe Lyons, 81, of Covington, Indiana, died on Thursday, March 26, 2020, in National Park Medical Center, Hot Springs, Arkansas. Davis Smith Funeral Home in Hot Springs, Arkansas, is assisting the family, and a private family service will be held at a later date. Essie Sias, 75, of Danville, died at 10:50 a.m. Monday, March 30th, 2020, at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Leek & Sons Funeral Home at 304 East Williams in Danville. Harston Bud Scott, 92, of Hoopston, died at 3:05 p.m. Friday, March 27, 2020, at Carl Hoopston Regional Health Center. A family graveside service will be held at Sunset Memorial Park in Danville, with Pastor Dan Michael officiating. Anderson Funeral Home at 427 East Main in Hoopston is in charge of the arrangements. And in other news stories today, we have one entitled, this is another staff report, Police Investigate Cone Drive Shooting. Danville. A Danville man and woman suffered injuries after being shot at while sitting in their car Saturday afternoon. Around 12:25 p.m. Saturday, Danville police responded to the 1200 block of Cone Drive in reference to a report of shots fired in the area. Upon arrival, officers located two victims who had suffered non-life-threatening gunshot wounds. A 29-year-old Danville man suffered a gunshot wound to his forearm, and a 22-year-old Danville woman suffered a gunshot wound to her upper arm. The victims told police they were sitting inside of their vehicle in the 1200 block of Cone Drive, when someone began shooting at them. Witnesses stated a black man was observed shooting in the direction of the victims before getting into a red vehicle and fleeing the area. No other information is currently available. No other injuries were reported during the incident. The investigation into the incident continues, and no other information is being released at this time. Anyone who has information regarding this incident is asked to call Danville Police at 217-431-2250 or Vermilion County Crime Stoppers at 217-446-TI-99. PS. Our next story is, this one is actually going to be out of the News Gazette. It's entitled, Homer Man Charged with 8 Counts of First-Degree Murder. Urbana. A Homer man, who reportedly has a history of mental health issues, was charged Monday with 8 counts of first-degree murder for allegedly shooting his live-in girlfriend and that woman's daughter early Sunday. Judge Tom DeFantis Monday arraigned Jonathan Perry, 28, for the shooting deaths of Kimberly Coyne, 54, and Blair Coyne, 24, who both lived in the 1600 block of County Road 2200 East, just northwest of St. Joseph. DeFantis set bond for Perry at $2.5 million and told him to be back in court April 16th for a probable cause hearing. Assistant Public Defender Ben Dyer asked DeFantis to appoint a psychiatrist to examine Perry, which DeFantis did. Perry was dating Kimberly Coyne, according to Champaign County Sheriff's Lieutenant Kurt Apperson. Her body was found inside her house, while her daughter's was found face down adjacent to the driveway. She was definitely trying to get in a car, Apperson said. State's Attorney Julia Reitz said deputies first became aware something was amiss about 1:45 a.m. on Sunday when they received reports of shots being fired around the Coyne's neighborhood. Deputies were unable to locate a shooting scene at that time. Reitz said at 4:15 a.m., deputies received a call from Perry's mother, Monica Perry of Homer, saying that her son was at her house saying things that scared her. He had been there about 45 minutes when she alerted authorities. Reitz said Monica Perry reported her son had a history of mental health issues and was making statements that suggested he had harmed his girlfriend, Kim Coyne, and her daughter, Blair, at their house in St. Joseph, where Perry had recently been staying. He continued to make statements suggesting he was having mental health issues about the Illuminati and the end of the world. He was wearing multiple pairs of pants and had an empty gun holster in the leg of one of the pairs of pants, Reitz said. When asked where the guns were, he said two guns were with the devil and the Antichrist. When asked if he had hurt anyone, he said he wanted a lawyer, Reitz said. Deputies noted what they believed to be blood on Perry's hand. He had driven Blair Coyne's vehicle to Homer and left it at the railroad tracks. Deputies found blood in it as well. Deputies also found the two guns believed used to kill the women, a .38 caliber revolver and four spent shell casings were near Kimberly Coyne's body, while a 9mm semi-automatic handgun and three spent shell casings were found next to Blair Coyne's body, Reitz said. Reitz said if Perry is convicted of both of the murders, he faces a mandatory sentence of natural life in prison. In 2012, Perry was sentenced to 8 years in prison for residential burglary he committed in Homer in December 2011. He was released from prison in July of 2016. He was also convicted that year of driving under the influence. And our next commercial news story is entitled, State Reports 461 New COVID-19 Cases. And this is by Jerry Nowicki from Capital News, Illinois. Springfield. The Illinois Department of Public Health reported 461 new cases of COVID-19 and 8 new deaths in the state Monday, as an outbreak worsened at Stateville Correctional Center in Crest Hill. IDPH said one of the deceased was an inmate at Stateville, and 12 other inmates from the facility are now hospitalized, with several requiring ventilators. IDPH said 77 others imprisoned at the facility have symptoms and are in isolation, and 11 prison staff members are isolated as well. The Illinois Department of Corrections is taking a number of steps to control the spread of COVID-19 in its correctional centers, according to a news release. staff who work with individuals in isolation and quarantine, as well as in the health center, are wearing full personal protective equipment, or PPE, and all staff are wearing some PPE. Staff are also having their temperature checked daily as they enter the facility. IDPH said correctional centers with a confirmed case are placed on lockdown, meaning the only movement in the facility is for medical care, and incarcerated individuals who show symptoms are being tested. The 8 deaths reported Monday were all in people over 50 years of age, with 5 in their 60s and 1 in their 70s across 4 counties. Clark, Crawford, Marion, Randolph, and Saline counties are now reporting cases, meaning the disease has been confirmed in 52 counties in the state, although medical experts have repeatedly warned that the spread is much wider than has been tested. IDPH is reporting a total of 5,057 cases in Illinois, including 73 deaths, according to the news release. Those affected range from an infant to 99 years of age. At a news conference Monday in Chicago, Governor J.B. Pritzker announced plans to temporarily convert part of the McCormick Place Convention Center in Chicago into an alternate care facility for COVID-19 patients with mild symptoms who don't require intensive care. The move is an effort to free up hospital beds for patients with severe COVID-19 cases, as officials expect a surge in hospitalizations in the coming weeks based on data and the trends seen in other large cities, according to the governor's office. Based on science, data, and the guidance of health experts, our approach to fighting this virus is two-pronged: suppress the spread and increase hospital capacity to meet the need, Pritzker said. A critical component of increasing our capacity is identifying and building out additional facilities across the state to support our existing hospitals and healthcare system. In partnership with the City of Chicago and the U.S. Army Corps, we are planning to increase capacity so we're prepared to treat patients and save lives. The McCormick Place project is supported by $15 million in funding from the Federal Emergency Management Agency. To help, for all personal protective equipment PPE donations, email ppe.donations@illinois.gov. For health questions about COVID-19, call the hotline at 1-800-889-3931. Medically trained professionals able to volunteer are asked to sign up at www.illinoishelps.net. And finally, in our community brief section, in Danville, deadline extended. Illinois Secretary of State Jesse White has announced the U.S. Department of Homeland Security has extended the federal Real ID deadline until October 1, 2021. DHS cited the COVID-19 pandemic and the impact the virus is having on the general public. Illinois driver's licenses or ID cards will continue to be accepted at airports, military bases, and secure federal facilities until October 1, 2021. Once driver services facilities reopen, White suggests people who want a Real ID wait until their current driver's license or ID card is about to expire before visiting a facility to apply. And in Catlin, the Catlin Public Library is closed until further notice. All due dates are extended for all materials until May 1st. Patrons may still drop off items in the library's drop box. We are not accepting donations. For information, visit the library's webpage or on Facebook. And the Vermilion County Commissioners have closed county offices to the public, excluding the Health Department in Newport, Indiana. They suggest only essential businesses be dealt with in person, and that is up to the discretion of each office holder or department head. The public can enter only with an appointment, and doors of the courthouse are locked. Visitors should use the west door only. And that takes us to the end of our time for Tuesday, March 31st, 2020. My name's Greg, and it's been a pleasure to read for you today. Stay safe and take care.